This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry. Thanks so much for listening, and a special welcome to listeners in Southern Colorado who are listening to us for the very first time on KRCC. We are going to step away from the grim political drama emerging from the sudden death of Justice Antonin Scalia over the weekend. Oh, there is plenty to say, and later this week, as the knee-jerk rhetoric of the partisan pundit classes dies down, some of the subtler implications of Scalia's legacy will become clear, and we will step into that with gusto, I assure you. But we are dedicating this whole hour to the long historical challenge of protecting water rights and water quality in industrial America. Not many people know just how much Justice Scalia was actually involved in this mission. Scalia hated chaos and uncertainty. He helped to oversee the settlement of the largest water rights claims in U.S. history, a case that took 27 years. The Snake River Basin adjudication resolved 158,000 Idaho water rights cases. Speaking in Idaho in 2014, Scalia said that the case eliminated uncertainty and cleared the way for a million people's drinking water and provided irrigation water to 3 million acres. Cataloging private property rights, he said, goes back at least to William of Normandy's conquest of Britain when he required cattle to be counted, so he could tax them, Scalia said, noting the ancient water disputes that have shaped the laws of today. What can you say about your water? Are you certain of its quality? Babies just love to get a bath in the sink or the tub and feel the strange, clear stuff. Water. An innocent baby, a tender mother, or a father giving their child a loving bath in pure water. It's a life-affirming experience of trust that reminds us of the fragility of life itself, reminding us how dependent we all are in everything we do on water.
We're spoiled in the United States. When we wake up in the morning, we turn on a tap, and out comes as much water as we want of high quality for less than we pay for cell phone service or for cable television. When most of us think about water, we think of it as though it were the air, infinite and inexhaustible, when in fact it's not.
This hour, water and America's curious relationship to it. We'll hear from people who, like almost all Americans, assume that pure water will be there whenever they need it, or even when they don't really need it. The green sound of water sprinklers, a sign of America's water abundance. Here are some sounds of water's scarcity.
As California suffers through an unprecedented drought that we've been covering, over half the state now facing the most severe conditions.
Very likely the single worst drought of the last 150 years and possibly approaching the worst drought of the last 500 to 1,000 years.
They say that before was a whole lake, and we went to see it, and we only see partial of the lake. The other partials are dry.
And we're looking at warmer temperatures, a record low snowpack, just tells me how much of a drought we're really in.
Or the sounds of water's contamination, where faucets suddenly deliver strange-smelling, slow-acting poison.
A protest is happening this evening up in Flint over the water crisis there.
The first test showed elevated lead levels.
In children, the effects of lead sometimes take months, if not years, to develop.
Lead exposure results in lowered IQs and behavioral problems.
Now she's even started to use bottled water to bathe her daughter, London.
It makes me itchy.
She had dug so bad in her scalp. She was bleeding her scalp.
There were times that we would be taking a shower, and if you happened to have a cut or a scrape, your shower would just burn. It would burn like you were sticking your hand in acid. The cut or the scrape or any kind of open skin would just be like liquid fire coming down on your skin. And there's just no way that anybody could convince me that that was safe.
Melissa Mays in Flint tried to get the authorities to listen to her for months, and they didn't. Who do you call when you have a water crisis?
Here the first responder really is the primacy agency, which in this case was the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality.
We turn now to the story of someone who relied on well water and who discovered how alone she was when she began to suspect that something was very wrong with her water. Jennifer Hall Massey lives in a small community near Charleston, West Virginia, known for its rushing streams and rivers and lush forests. But it is also right in the center of coal country.
You know, sometimes when we're faced with illness, we're more focused on how to fix it, how to overcome it, and not necessarily the cause. So we had experienced high levels of health effects within the community, really didn't realize our neighbors were experiencing the same things. It was probably in 2007. There was a flyer at a local convenience store that said if you're interested in city water and you live in this area, to go to a church, you know, they're going to have a meeting at a church. And it was while we were at that meeting, my little brother was 29. He had passed away the year before that. And while we were at that meeting, I realized we had six neighbors in a 10-house span that had brain tumors. You know, only two survived.
And no one tested your water. No one came to you to certify that your water was good. No one seemed to be concerned about what might be leaching into the aquifer in your neighborhood?
After that meeting, there ended up being a lawsuit, so it was more private testing. We approached the health department, and you know, they're only concerned about bacteria, and what we had in our water was basically contaminants that are found in a sludge pond or a slurry pond. The problem with local officials performing the studies in this state, you know, our state is primarily a coal industry, and the industry that was contaminating us is also the industry that the state makes all of their money from. So it kind of puts them in an awkward situation as well, and sometimes they work harder to pretend you don't exist than just to do the right thing and keep the companies within their permit levels. The coal company that was in our backyard, they were a bad apple. It was cheaper for them to pay small fines than it was to work within their permits.
Any things you noticed about the taste of the water, the effect that it had on your body, the, you know, what it felt like to take a shower that made you suspect that it was a little bit different, especially if you traveled somewhere else?
I have two children. They're now 12 and 14. When they were little, anytime we would leave the water and come back into the water, my youngest one, he would get scabs and stuff on his body, you know, dental issues. You know, the more we brushed his teeth, the worse they were. And then when we figured out it was the water, you know, his teeth are fine now. Thankfully, it was his baby teeth. Myself, you know, have a lot of crowns. You just really don't think of it while you're in it. You're more along the lines of thinking of, okay, what do we have to do to, you know, fix this health problem? You know, even my brother, you know, had a brain tumor when they first diagnosed him. You're just going through the steps to fix it and really don't think of the cause.
How did you get your water system changed, and then what happened after that?
Public awareness is really what got us pushed through the system. When I first contacted our commissioners about getting water, you know, I was informed that our community was offered city water in the 60s, and they didn't want it. So, you know, it would be at least 10 years. And, you know, I just told them, we're going to be dead in 10 years. The entire community still does not have water, but the majority of the population does. So that was a blessing for us.
And the municipal water comes from where?
Charleston.
Is that part of the Elk River system?
Yes, it absolutely is. We also had a spill with that water in 2014. That the chemical that was spilled in Elk River is a chemical that's used to clean coal.
So your experience, and, you know, we're talking about a lifetime of health compromises and surgeries and loss of, in the case of your brother, lives. And, you know, look at Flint, and it's a situation where nobody knew anything about it for 18 months and no one paid any attention for 18 months. And all of a sudden, it's an emergency. What does that say about this country's awareness of the importance of drinking water?
First off, no person, no company, no industry, no state should even have the opportunity to contaminate in that manner. And, you know, I feel for the people of Flint. Like I said, I'm glad at least they're acknowledging it. In our area, they worked very hard to honestly make us go away, pretend we didn't exist. Oh, there's nothing wrong there. When indeed, you know, there was a lot wrong with the story. The problem was, you know, we were very small. There was about 300 in our community.
How's your water now?
We have, like I said, we're on a municipal water supply coming out of the Elk River in Charleston, West Virginia. When we had the spill, you know, of course, there was an immediate need because all the water through the pipes was contaminated. They didn't drain the storage facilities, clean them properly. So therefore, it's going to be a dilution as far as how all of the chemical gets out of the system. And so we do not drink it. We do bathe in it and do laundry in it. But yeah, there's no way I drink it. I don't use the ice because, again, they did not drain the tanks. So it's going to run its course.
How much have you spent to make your water acceptable or to get water that is acceptable for your family?
Wow. I really don't know. But, you know, we, like I said, we definitely use bottled water for drinking and cooking, you know, until I really don't know when I will ever get comfortable with water that's coming out of the pipes here in Charleston, West Virginia, because of the spill in 14.
Do you think anybody should be confident about their water based on the experience that you've had and in Flint? It's so easy for people to think, oh, that's just strange communities with industries nearby. And Flint, of course, you know, they're bankrupt. And of course, that's going to happen there. Is there any reason to think it wouldn't happen anywhere?
No, absolutely not. And anywhere, especially, like I said, here in Charleston, you've got such a, you know, coal is our industry, and it is our primary source of income for the state. So there's always going to be the risk that regulation can be overlooked. You know, it's just a stream. No, it's not just a stream. It's water that you're drinking. It's water that makes it through your pipes, and your children are drinking it. So, yeah, it can happen anywhere. And what happened here in 2014 with the citizens of Charleston was similar to what happened in our area. You know, first they try and tell you the water's okay, there's nothing wrong. But honestly, Charleston, West Virginia, and its surrounding communities, you know, there's no research that tells you the effect of that chemical on your health. And we are, whether we like it or not, a bunch of lab rats that time will tell, and we will be the research.
Jennifer Holm-Massey speaking to us from Charleston, West Virginia. Tell us about your water quality and the water infrastructure in your town.
This is Jim Curry from Columbus, Ohio. And I was concerned about the water supply and the quality before Flint. But Flint really carried the message about how all the systems that we rely on are deteriorating without really people paying as much attention as we need to.
Illinois, I live in suburban Chicago, 3 miles from both an oil refinery and a coal-fired power plant. My town uses municipal wells. I've used filters since day one just because I don't like the taste. After Flint, I have even better reason.
This is Lois Gridley. I'm calling from upstate New York. I do trust our water supply, but for the past year, concern has been growing about street collapses downtown due to aged pipes. With the national infrastructure aging, how many states face this crisis? Old pipes right along with the aging roads.
We're talking about water all this hour, from the tap in your home to the policies set by the federal government. Tell us your story. The number is 877-8-MY-TAKE. Much more at thetakeaway.org.